Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. You are listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center and have co-chair on the political right, Dan McKay.
Hey, everybody.
Welcome, Senator. And on the left, Shireen Gorbani with the Salt Lake County Council. Welcome, Shireen.
Thank you so much. Nice to be with you.
Nice to have you again in the studio. I really don't want to spend a lot of airtime talking about the impeachment hearings. It's just because, depending on who you are, you listen to the facts and you come to completely different conclusions and your head is spinning by the end. So I'm just going to look at the two of you. Are you okay if we don't spend a lot of time on that, or do you guys want to talk about it?
I have to confess, I haven't seen really any of it. It's just, you know, I kind of made this case last week. It's a circus and it's there. I didn't watch any of the Clinton impeachment stuff either. I just kind of got the, you know, the summary, but I kind of wished, looking back on it, the hat, it's just, there's just so much of it right now, and it's just all-encompassing. Yeah. So I don't know much.
Shireen, what I keep seeing is political ads that are going to be made off of these testimonies.
Yeah.
And on the Democratic side, I can hear Ambassador Sondland saying, you know, absolutely, there was a quid pro quo, you know, and Mick Mulvaney, of course we do this.
All the time.
Yeah, and then on the Republican side, I can see, you know, other little sound bites, and it's just so aggravating because the truth is not in either of those places.
You know, yes, and a moment I think that has really, or maybe just a larger theme that's really stuck with me is thinking about many of these career professionals who have been serving this country in really incredible and important ways, having finally some attention and so little of it being on really the breadth of knowledge that they bring to the table, the many years of dedication working in difficult places, navigating very difficult, intense, you know, multinational relationships. But I think the one of the things that just is really standing out to me was at the end of Marie Yovanovitch's hearing, I guess, or her session.
Testimony, whatever it
her
was.
Her testimony. The applause that broke out after she...
Is that right? I didn't hear that.
Yeah, after she went through, which was, I'm certain, a very difficult. I think it would be difficult for anyone, but just kind of the sense that I got from her off of her personality, kind of feeling like she seems like a very thoughtful, very measured person. Seeing that response afterwards was something that I really appreciated.
Yeah. Dan, there's a part of the hearings where Donald Trump, in both a phone call and a text, apparently said to Ambassador Sondland, you know, there's no quid pro quo. There's no, I don't want a quid pro quo. I want nothing, is the quote that the president used. And it's pretty compelling because it's you know, in the public record that the president's actually saying that.
Yeah.
But if you look at the timing, it's after the whistleblower had made the report and the IG was already investigating. And so it has absolutely the feel of someone covering their tracks. And yet it's as if the people on the right aren't seeing that.
Yeah, I haven't seen it all, so yeah. I can't really comment educatedly. I'll just say the element of what is going on is not good for the country. It's the same mantra. If I was Shireen, I would say neither is quid pro quo work using government resources. So the fact that, you know, we're talking about these are going to be great campaign ads. These are going to be, you know, that's the conversation.
Shows how messed up it is.
This is not like, this is not positive public policy. This, you know, but again, no one on either side of the aisle, when they lose a presidential race, seems interested in actually doing anything productive. So I guess, you know, we have that going for
us. The thought that we would ever have a former U.S. ambassador of some, you know, reputation and distinguished service in her background testifying, and while she's testifying, the president is doing a character assassination. It's the stuff of movies, you guys.
Yeah.
Well, okay, I said I didn't want to talk about it, and then we went ahead and did it for a little bit. But a few other things that have hit nationally that have been interesting. So Bloomberg entered the race, at least filed in some states. The governor of Massachusetts, who many people think of as quite a moderate, is in. And Pete Buttigieg, the mayor of South Bend?
South Bend, Indiana.
Okay, the mayor of South Bend all of a sudden takes a pretty significant lead in the Iowa polls, outpolling both Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. What are you seeing there, Shireen? And then we'll go to Dan.
You know, we had the opportunity to, Utah Democrats brought him a couple of years ago, and he was here speaking, had the opportunity to meet him and speak with him. And I would say there, if you have the opportunity to see him in person, to hear him speak, it's hard not to find it inspiring. Mm-hmm. A person who has served this country, a person who has found, you know, difficult solutions in a micro scale. I mean, South Bend, Indiana is not a large metropolitan area, but a lot of the problems that he talks about there, I think, are reflective of some of the big problems we are seeing nationally. And I think a lot of people appreciate his conversation around unity, around coming together, mm-hmm. around this being about something bigger than the ongoing nightmare of the presidency of Donald Trump for, mm-hmm. for many people, including, of course, Democrats. But there's just something incredibly grounded in his discussions about what we used to hold dear, right? Values of freedom, of liberty, and of community. And I think
national unity and even faith.
A lot to the table.
Talks about his faith.
He does.
Really interesting. Dan, have you spent much time watching either Democratic debates or heard Pete Buttigieg in action? I bought his book and started it.
Oh, wow.
I didn't enjoy it, so I haven't finished it.
Yeah.
I think he either should have had someone co-write with him, or maybe that was the problem, is that he didn't really write it.
I was going to say, either he actually wrote it, and that isn't good, or he didn't write it, and that's not good either.
Yeah, there was something. I just couldn't get into it. But I find him a refreshing voice that I think is, and we're not seeing the last of him.
Yeah. I think he has potential to be threatening to, you know, a surge in Iowa is a surge in the country for a lot of people.
That's the heartland, right?
Yeah, it's heartland. Yeah. So, you know, I've long said if the Democrats were smart enough to find somebody with a reasonable voice and elect them as their nominee, that's a different element. But neither of the other two candidates are reasonable voices. So, you know, if President Trump, I guess, was concerned about anything, is that the Democrats may find their soul. I doubt it, but, you know, it's worth a try.
What did you think of the governor of Massachusetts, Patrick Deval?
And Deval Patrick.
Deval Patrick. Yep. Excuse me. That could happen. and then Bloomberg, Dan, getting in.
Yeah. More the merrier. And this will be when you have an impeachment proceeding against a sitting president who could be up for reelection, a lot of people perceive weakness. And so you're going to see, I think, a renewed or a different group of candidates looking at some of these races. Mayor Bloomberg, I mean, he's not going to get traction. You know what I mean? I think he is going to get distraction. And mm-hmm. so, you know, he'll get a few more minutes of fame.
I wondered if he had a strategy to, in a couple of places, disrupt things just enough to affect the race. Not that he would win, but that he would do something to affect the race.
Well, and I think there's also a larger conversation about skipping Iowa, right? Like, mm-hmm. so you're going just to Super Tuesday. What does that look like? Does that create an expectation for that going forward? Because I think there is a lot of debate if Iowa is really the place where we should be hashing out who our next president is.
Yeah. In the last week, we had Karen Pence, the second lady, the wife of Vice President Pence, come to Utah. Donald Trump sort of opened his campaign filing paperwork in Utah, announced that both former Senator Hatch and current Senator Lee would co-chair co-chair the Trump campaign in Utah. Did that go over well in your world, Shireen?
Oh, I was like, so additional seats on the Titanic, you can come right on. I mean, it doesn't
She's
feel,
clever, Dan. She's very clever.
Doesn't feel like a great move, considering that Trump really isn't that popular in this state. I mean, he was also, if I'm not mistaken, Mike Lee was the person on the floor of the Republican National Convention leading the charge against Donald Trump. And so I think what this really is indicative that the Republican Party has become the party of Donald Trump. And I think that gives pause to a lot of people in this state.
Dan, I didn't like that.
Well, you know, there is no question that in Utah, you know, we've talked about this before. From a cultural standpoint, we're pretty passive aggressive, right? Mm-hmm. Not actually aggressive. And so the president offends the senses of many. Mm-hmm. And I was going to say some, but really it's many. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I would think that if you took Twitter and many other things that the president, you know, gets off the cuff about, I think if you took that away from the president in Utah, he would be up
also
over
maybe a couple of the wives.
65 and 70%, versus, are you suggesting Donald Trump have more wives?
No, I'm saying if you took away maybe some of the other marriages before this one.
Oh, you know. Well, but I don't think that, again, marriage failure, I mean, great people can have marriage problems, right? But I'll say that, you know, you take the Twitter account away from the president, and I think that would at least bump the president by 10 survey points, if not higher. And I think it would help with Natalie as well.
I'm just nodding. It totally would. And it's because I really respect in leaders the words they use and the way they use words to inspire, the way they use words to affect change. And when I hear President Trump speak, I either hear lies or I hear insults or I hear...
Crass.
Yeah, or I hear something that I just can't believe because of all the other things he's doing. And so to me, this whole thing of what you want to teach your children and what you want to build society around, it's not him. So I'm politically homeless when it comes to the president, and I'm not afraid to say that. Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. I'm with Shireen Gourbani and Dan McKay. Stay tuned. We've got some more news in the second half.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Dan McKay on the right.
Shireen Gourbani on the left.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. We had big news in the last week. Our former governor and the former ambassador to Russia, John Huntsman Jr., announces a run for governor. Widely anticipated. We foreshadowed it in our program last week. Dan, he did this in Cedar City. He was at Southern Utah University.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me what you make of the timing, the way he did it.
So, okay, if you're a candidate with high name ID, you know your event is going to be covered, and you're looking for a way to distance yourself from the, I am a moderate, I'm out there, I'm all of those things, right? What do you do?
Uh-huh.
You walk, talk, dress, and show up in places that are very everyman Utah. And if I am running John Huntsman's campaign, I am not, I would have put him in blue jeans and a flannel shirt, probably a dog next to them.
At least that was in the announcement video.
Yep, yep.
Right?
Yeah. And so I would have
had his wife Mary Kay with
Mary
him.
Kay. In... And she's wearing a hoodie, right? And they're hiking out in the hills somewhere and at a very everyman approach. One of my colleagues, because I wasn't really politically active, I was going through law school and I was head down in the books and really wasn't paying attention as much when John Huntsman was the governor the first time. And so a friend of mine said, oh, you watch, he will seduce you. Those were the words,
mm-hmm.
right? And I said, no, come on.
He's a prince.
Everybody else.
I use the term prince.
And
he has a
right.
presence that when you hear him talk and when he, he's very articulate. And especially when he talks about things he knows a lot about, his depth is really on the high end.
And he's every man in his presentation.
Yeah.
He
yeah.
is very down to earth.
Harley Davidson, taco stands.
He is everything
his band.
You could to shed.
Do you know all this, Shireen?
I know a little bit.
Oh,
the band is new.
To shed the stereotype of being this uber privileged kid from the east side of Salt Lake, you throw him down to Cedar City, you put him in a flannel shirt, and you make sure that the dog is right there and the whole picture is there. I'm not kidding. I could not have written a better script. I thought, Huntsman nailed the landing, in my opinion.
Even if he landed in his company's G5 at the at the Cedar City Airport.
Yeah, sure, why not?
Yeah. So as an occasional DJ, I would really love to hear more about his band. But a couple things came to mind for me. It's the home of the Levitt Center, which is an interesting kind of connection there.
I thought that was a touch of class, but I'm a Levitt person.
Right.
And so I'm like, how wonderful to show that sort of nod to a former governor that had served this state so honorably.
Right. So I noticed that. I had the immense privilege and honor of being at the Utah Association of Counties annual convention in St. George at the same time, and he came down to that. And so that was interesting, too, to see him at the dinner, speaking with, socializing with a number of county commissioners from across the state. And the receptions there and kind of the lines there were was interesting.
This goes with the idea that everything's calculated, and what a masterstroke to not only have everything that Dan described, but also to have the Association of Counties at your fingertips there.
Yeah. You just drive down the road and you're there.
Because UAC, as it's called, is more of a rural dominated association. Am I correct?
Sure. Fair to say.
Okay, because there's 29 counties and maybe 20 of them are rural.
Right.
Solid County is protesting membership in that group.
And incorrect. So I totally we that. Are fully participating, but Utah County left, so take it up.
Are you recalcitrant? Oh, they are.
They left, yep.
Yeah, so interesting. Okay, so he gets in the race. We can break it down, but let's just talk about Greg Hughes. Dan, you're a good friend, so I know you're careful how you... publicly comment on Hughes's move into the Utah governor's race, but you know, because of the money he's raised and because of the statements he's made, the meetings he's having, we're probably within 10 days to 2 weeks of him entering the race, I'm guessing.
Gotta be. I mean, today, you know, there we'll talk about this in a minute, but you know, the Chris Stewart element, he said on social media that, hey, I am going to announce to run for governor. Please stop thinking that I might run for Congress, which you could not be more clear at that point. And so Greg sent it, right? And he wants to run. And that the fact that I think it says something about Greg. So can I just contrast just briefly for a second? We didn't really talk about this with Governor Huntsman, but Governor Huntsman announced, and I will say the only time I've ever seen the Spencer Cox campaign knees quiver a little bit when you have John Huntsman rumored to be interested in the race for the last couple of months, and you come up with a bunch of really defensive social media stuff.
I thought the what David and Goliath was like quite the ordeal. I'm like, but he's a lieutenant governor.
But if you left it at that, you're probably okay.
It was a really nice painting that he had, though, or sketch or whatever.
Yeah, but I also was like, at some point, Democrat with no money will probably get in this race.
I mean, it's an LDS Church sketch, Natalie. I mean, that's right out of the LDS Church clip.
Even more clever, right? Yeah.
So, but so if you left it at the sketch, it's that, right? But there's a bunch of like social media stuff that, in my opinion, was somewhat like beneath what I thought Spencer's campaign. I really was kind of watching his account for something pithy and something like, yeah, bring it on, we're in, this is great, you know. I didn't see that, so it was the first time I saw them quake, right, a little bit.
Interesting. You know, I kind of saw it, and I'm going, well, he talked about the cities and all the mayors that have endorsed him. He had that ready to go. He just kind of, you know, made a sort of a tease about the entitlement of the Huntsman by the David and Goliath. So I was able to get through it. I didn't think the Democratic point of view. But he also had a tweet about, oh, you know, my name's not on all the buildings. We didn't just give a $150 million gift. Yeah. My brother doesn't own the newspaper, but still vote for me. And I thought, that's pretty clever.
I don't know. Okay, you win.
No. It like, could I'll be knees quaking.
But I will say this because I don't think this is a bad thing, by the way. See, those of us who know Spencer well, he's pretty thoughtful and he's very hardworking. He does all of those things, but he is kind of a regular guy. Mm-hmm. And I think, honestly, from a candidate's perspective, it was very refreshing to see a candidate just a little bit nervous about their race and showing how much they have invested in it. If you think about what they've done,
it had to be bad news to see Huntsman get in after you'd been working as hard as.
So there's that element. But then I contrast it with, you know, if you're Greg Hughes and, you know, Huntsman's in, he's going to be the only candidate that announces after Huntsman does, where he's just saying, I'm in, bring it. Mm-hmm. So to me, that just kind of, it reinforces the Greg Hughes that I know and love, that he's ready just to fight no matter what.
I had an interesting question. I was speaking in front of a group, and in the Q&A, someone asked, of all these candidates running for governor, which one do you think would be best for the economy?
Oh.
Yeah, I was like, that's hard to have to answer that in public. And just real quickly, and then Shereen, I want you to comment on it. But I said, you know, Hughes gets things done. He's a problem solver. So I like that about him. Huntsman, very international. And if you believe that globalization is the future of our economy, he's the guy. Amy Winter Newton, incredibly smart and well-informed. I find her very data-driven in things I interact with her on. Jeff Birmingham, the tech guy, and he'll be the change agent. He'll disruptor. Be the one. Yeah, the disruptor. Good way to say it. And Cox, I had a hard time putting my finger on. I mean, you think rural and you think the diplomat and you think he's so genuine and maybe a uniter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, those. So, Shireen, either break that down or do you kind of agree with that analysis?
Interesting.
You know, I didn't give one that would be the best.
You know, I would say the thing that's interesting to me is when I kind of just around the state or have the opportunity to talk to people about, especially Democrats, right? Like, you know, Democrats that they've liked, I hear a lot of people really reflect on their deep love for Matheson as our governor, right? Mm-hmm. And there is something about his warmth, my understanding is he wasn't a super warm guy, but on that person-to-person level, people just felt like he was a down-to-earth guy. Mm-hmm. And they're like a real salt of the earth kind of thing. And mm-hmm. I think there's a desire right now, especially with the elevated kind of scream at you politics that we're seeing everywhere, to find someone who really has that groundedness, that mm-hmm. really connects with people on a human level.
So Cox would represent that in a way?
I think that's where you're going. Yeah. And I think there's also that sense of feeling just such a deep desire in our politics for authenticity. And you kind of talked about that, you know, here are all the boxes I would check if I were going to, you know, roll out a billionaire to run. Like, these are all the things I would do. People feel that. Mm-hmm. And I think they mm-hmm. want it to feel real. They want to feel like somebody actually cares about their lives. I think that's going to matter a lot in this race.
Shireen, are you hearing any Democratic names?
Oh, yeah.
Well, come on, say some. Why is nobody talking? Like, you get trial air balloons. Well, seriously,
no.
I'm surprised.
Hilarious.
I mean, that we're this late in the cycle. And you know, I feel guilty when I speak about it in public because I can't say anything about the Democrats because there's no name that I've even heard.
Yeah.
I can't even speculate on something. The only one I could speculate on was Brian King, and it's because then I tell people he likes being in the legislature, and you can't be on two ballots at the same time.
Well, so I'm not at all saying that I believe that I'm currently qualified to run for governor, but I am also on the ballot in 2020, running for the Salt Lake County seat at large, and that's a lot, right?
Yeah.
And,
okay.
We have a lot. You know, we have had a long. I would say maybe we don't have a deep bench. And so there are really interesting conversations happening with incredibly smart and talented people, some that have, I guess, maybe been off the bench for a little bit mm-hmm. and others that have never played in this game. And I think we will find somebody who will stand up for our values and really talk about a different approach to the future of the state.
Do you think
Jim Matheson's busy. Ben McAdams is busy.
And be on the
Shireen
ballot,
is
too.
Busy. Brian King is busy.
So now what?
So it's like a giant busy signal at the Democratic headquarters for like anybody who,
well,
you know.
I think the question we should ask Shireen is, will we know this name in the next 2 weeks?
No, I don't think so. I think it'll be after the new year.
Okay.
So hold on. You started to classify something. And it kind of hit a trigger, right? Hughes the fighter. I'll just go backwards, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Hughes the fighter.
The can-do, you know.
The can-do.
Solve problems guy.
You know, little man coming out of nowhere. Huntsman, the international guy. Winder with the local bridge connection, I think, you know, being able to build bridges and connect local issues with state policy. I think that's good. Birmingham, I love the disruptor, you know, mm-hmm. the change agent.
Really important
that kind
to the
of
race.
Thing.
Yeah.
And then and I think he's really working hard to fulfill that role. Cox, who offers a very everyman bridge builder aspect as well, and really kind of the friendship guy. If you think about an election and you have those five options to choose from, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. From an open governor standpoint, I will say the state is going to be well served because regardless of what the political mood is when we get to the Republican primary and whoever's on it, it is going to be a very well, I think, thought out and represented individual.
Dan, you are making the point for Count My Vote. That's why I'm doing this.
I totally understand.
I say that because look at the choice and competition that everybody gets to be a part of.
Not everybody.
Not just, okay, sorry.
We have an open primary.
I would love the open primary, and forgive me for that, Shireen.
The one candidate they have on the ballot is going to not have a primary.
But my point is that that in the Republican primary, we're going to have all that choice and how positive that is. And of course, you'll get it on the Democratic side as well because
Republican
of signatures to the ballot.
Republican delegates can make that decision just as well as anybody else.
Let's go to gripes. Dan, did you come prepared with a gripe?
Yes! I'm bitter. So, you know, we passed a bill last legislative session to try and make sure that that we were including needs-based elements as part of our regents and scholarship programs. And I got to be honest, the Regents and the State Board of Education draining that account, that it will be bankrupt by the time these kids need it. You know, there are kids who are in poverty as well, or working their way out of poverty, who might miss out on the Regents scholarship for one reason or another. They don't qualify, or they didn't reach, you know, they didn't reach some objective. And at the end of the day, it is just ridiculous and bankrupt, in my opinion, for us to be taking away incentives for, you know, progress and improvement. That's just frustrating.
Shereen.
I'm going to go with a recent Salt Lake Tribune article. More than half of Utah women think they have a lower status than men in the state. And Utah consistently ranks at the bottom of the barrel for states for women. We get Fs on many report cards, and that's usually tied to things like the wage gap, political representation, access to childcare, many of the cultural challenges for women in this state. It's something I'm very passionate about. I know that we are making strides in some areas, but there's a long way to go for women, and I just want you to know I'm on your side.
Good point. I'm Natalie Gochner. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I've been joined by Shereen Gourbani and Dan McKay. Programs produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks for listening.